Do you like the Star Wars? Well, you've come to the right place because this is yet again, if quite a little late, the Rancor Pit. And having a little laugh at my expense there is, of course, my co-host, Eddie Medina.
Hey, guys, how's it going? It's not at your expense, it's our expense.
That's
I'm,
true, yeah.
It's been a crazy couple of weeks trying to get ready for AllCon and everything else coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, if you've been following the Jedi Cool Universe and Convention Awareness Project Texas and the United States of Geekdom, speaking of things I've fallen behind on, I've been trying to do a 30-day countdown. So you know that I'm pretty well embroiled in AllCon at the moment. We're still taking time to spend some time with you and talk about Star Wars. And this week we have a special guest, Eddie.
We sure do. I have invited along my brother Vic, who is a huge Star Wars fan and is probably the one responsible for not only getting me interested in Star Wars, but also G.I. Joe and also comic books in general. Vic, why don't you say hi to everybody?
good evening. And Cole, I find your lack of timeliness disturbing. to do a bad pun. But yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. We can kind of talk, get a little nostalgic for all things Star Wars, and I guess on the plate tonight we'll be talking vintage Kenner.
This is true. We're going to take a look at the toys that kind of defined collecting, that were the thing to collect, and when there weren't any around, you wound up just casting about for anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that all started back in 1977 with the Star Wars Early Bird set, which I was fortunate enough to be have waiting for me under the tree.
Oh, here we go, bragging about the early bird set again.
You know it, you know, but I don't know if it's really something that's brag-worthy because it also dates you.
No, that's pretty...
Eddie, I don't know if you probably don't remember the early bird. I remember seeing the early bird. I didn't see enough to want to get it, but I remember going through a Sears as a wee lad and see the artwork, because they had, you know, that cheesy artwork of the four figures that you could get.
Yeah, it had that sort of watercolor feel to it. It was it was like a Pete Mondrian or something, you know.
Right, and I saw that, and I remember, you know, of course, being a fan of the movie already, and when I saw that, it just didn't entice me to want to buy it, which is why it's so hard to come by now, because no kid wanted an empty box for Christmas.
Except this one.
Yeah, well, that's right.
And you know what's so funny about that is if somebody tried to pull something like that off today, there would be so many ways that you could sell that. You could hard sell the daylights out of that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have all the social media and you have the internet and you have all these ways to spread the word. I don't think they even so much as fielded a commercial.
I would be surprised if they did.
Yeah, because it's one of those things where it just, you know, it kind of came, how I even knew it was coming, I couldn't begin to tell you. I guess it just sort of, there it was, and, you know, mm-hmm. You saw the big box full of big rectangular envelopes ready to entice you, and that was really all there was to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, there was a commercial.
Was there really?
Yes. It's
good
on
night.
YouTube.
Oh, well, I'll have to link that in, because I may have seen it, because I remember, you know, very much wanting the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I should say this. I shouldn't be surprised that you know that, Vic, because for those of y'all listeners who don't know, Vic runs a website called Revenge of the Fifth, and it pretty much focuses on a lot of the original trilogy stuff, and one of the features he usually has on there is finding old commercials of the Kenner toys. Is that right, Vic?
Right, and you can essentially find anything on YouTube, and it's actually Revenge of the Fifth with a 5th.net, and because there's a lot of Revenge of the Fifth stuff going on out there, but for us it's Revenge of the 5th.net, and yeah, most of what we do is it's run by Eric Shirey and I, two of us just decided one day we thought we were really clever that. You know, we were talking about, you know, May the 4th was coming up, and my nephew Chris mentioned, well, does that make May 5th Revenge of the 5th? And I said, that's kind of funny. And
yes.
I mentioned it to Eric, and Eric was like, dude, we got to do something about that.
Yeah, that would be Eric.
We literally put together a website overnight and actually had it up on May the 5th. Is it 2 years ago or 1 year ago? I can't think of it
now.
Seems
like it was two. Seems like it was two.
But our thing was, is not, you know, just we wanted to use it to kind of celebrate because Eric is about the same age as I am. You know, we were from that original Star Wars generation, so we love the old commercials, all the real cheesy nostalgia from all that. So that's basically what it is. It's basically just, you know, goofy memes, pictures of old catalog, scans from the old Sears catalog, you know, pictures of old stuff, videos of, you know, one thing or another. And we even have a Pinterest board of just goofy stuff that original Star Wars fans would go crazy over. And so, yeah, and that's basically what we do. It's more of just a celebration of, you know, for...
So obviously, Eddie doesn't talk much to his brother, as we... You know, this is just now, I'm getting wind of this just now.
Yeah, obviously.
We'll definitely need to get to Eric on the show sometime, too, because Eric and I have worked together in the past on some stuff, so that's really good to know. Apparently, there may well have been a commercial that got me all the more excited about it, but it was that it happened at all. It was pretty amazing. It's largely considered one of the most incredible bit of marketing that was ever done.
Yes.
And somehow got pulled off, and the rest, as they say, is history. And I've probably talked at length at many other places about that long, terrible, dreadful wait for that box to finally arrive. So you could actually be one of the first people in the world to hold in your hands an actual Star Wars toy. And I think that may have even been the subject of one of the articles I wrote for the Star Wars Super Collector's Wish Book.
Well, to take a step back, there may be some listeners who aren't familiar with why the Early Bird Special actually came out. Do y'all want to touch on that briefly?
Absolutely. That's a good idea. Because a lot of people may not even know, what are they talking about? Bird. I don't remember any birds in Star Wars.
Here we go, the voices. But yeah, for those...
Wasn't that character they introduced to the McDonald's commercials late in the game?
What?
Oh, that little bird. I remember that bird with the...
See? The old people know.
You old fogies, yeah. Seeing as I'm only a year younger than Vic, so yeah.
You just don't pay attention, that's what it is.
And like I said earlier, Vic is really the one responsible for not only getting me into comics and Star Wars and everything else, but basically... If it wasn't for him, I would probably just be walking around as a kid. I was just like so absent-minded that, what's this? And yeah, I definitely remember Vic being the one getting me, being at the forefront with knowing what Star Wars was before everybody else at school and, you know, knowing to go look out for the figures. And he was the one that brought home a G.I. Joe number 22, which got me addicted on G.I. Joe. So yeah, thanks for that, Vic. And I have my paycheck is gone every month because of you.
Well, you're welcome.
The thing is, it's also kind of fun to hear from someone who remembered seeing the Early Bird set and thinking, it's kind of dull.
Yeah.
I mean, and those were the old days when you could go into a Sears and they actually had a toy section.
That's true. Sears had a great Penny collection. In fact, I don't know if I've talked about it on this show before, but I've talked about it elsewhere, that there was a time when I was such an avid collector, I had the phone numbers for Sears, Best Buy...
Or Best.
Not Best Buy, but Best. Yes, Best Products, JCPenney, anybody that had toys came
up. Montgomery Wards.
The Walmarts, Montgomery Wards had a toy department as well. And the Early Bird set, I couldn't tell you where this one came from, probably Sears. They seem to be on the ball with Star Wars from day one.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And, in fact, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, either Sears or JCPenney is where the vintage store display I have to this day came from.
Nice.
Somehow they sold it down enough that Dad could just walk in and say, I'd like to have that for my son. For the record, my dad sounds nothing like that. That's just a voice that my friend Steve and I used to do. But the Early Bird set was literally, I think the best description I've ever seen of it was selling a promise. What had happened was Lucasfilm, it's often described as Lucas himself. I don't know if he was personally out pounding the pavement. I imagine he was a little busy with his movie and all. But, you know, Lucasfilm went out and tried to sell the idea of, you know, licensing this property.
Yeah.
And really, for the most part, licensing wasn't something that was done. There had been Star Trek figures in the past. There had been superheroes, Mego and others had done different superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, a sense of sustainability was always the order of the day.
Yeah.
You want something that's going to be, you know, with this, with Marvel and DC superheroes, they're going to be around. They've been around for years. They're going to continue to be around. So it was a worthwhile investment. When you're looking at a movie, prior to that, 77 movies came and went in a week or two.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't really much point. And finally, somebody at Kenner Products, a little at the time they were a division of General Mills, so when they weren't busy making cereal, a lot of things people don't realize. Yes, if you go back to the early Kenner stuff,
it says General Mills.
You can find the General Mills logo.
Yeah,
on a lot of the stuff, and of course, early on, even in the early days, I used to write to them incessantly. So I think I found the address on the underside of an X-wing or something.
Oh gosh!
And somebody had the idea of, if we're going to do this, from I think at the time all they had was a handful of photographs and the Macquarie production paintings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Somebody was shrewd enough to realize, if you're going to do this and make it marketable, it's not just the characters that people are going to want. They're going to want to be able to use the ships and stuff. There had mm-hmm. been Space 1999 toys when I was a kid mm-hmm. in various scales. And I remember being very jealous of somebody who had the Eagle. Because that thing was so cool, and it probably cost like $17.
Yeah.
Which was a hell of a lot of money back then.
Oh, yeah.
Or as we used to say then, we'd say that's a hell of a lot of money back now. But what do you... I think the early bird set was like probably $10.
That's unbelievable to think that you could have owned it for $10 knowing now what we're looking at.
That's sort of like, you know, when Ripley is thawed out an alien and they describe everything in adjusted dollars. Same sort of idea, you know, that's like $30 now.
Yeah.
But the idea was that they needed to go smaller than the average boy toy, which was the G.I. Joe or the Mego, to go a little smaller. They needed to go even smaller than that to be able to kind of toy with the scale of the ships and vehicles and other environments and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And reportedly the president of the company, or maybe the president of Boys Toys or whatever it was, someone had the idea of just sort of held his thumb and forefinger up, so let's make it about yay high, and somebody ran and grabbed a ruler, and that's how the 3/4-inch scale was born.
Yeah, that's right.
But then, you know, this movie was coming out in summer of 77, which is close enough to Christmas if you're a toy company that you're already thinking about what you want to do at Christmas time.
Yeah.
And here they were with 9 months to a year of lead time on production, and they weren't going to have a thing at market come Christmas. And then they were going to have to try to follow that by marketing this license they just bought after Christmas.
Yeah.
So somebody came up with the idea of selling a promise, is we would give you tantalizing preview to make you just gnash your teeth every day as you looked at it and thought, how much nicer this plastic, this cardboard backdrop, peg holes. You've already got a description of what's going to happen when they get in. These figures are going to have holes in their feet, and you can stick them on the pegs.
Uh-huh.
When are they going to get here?
Uh-huh. You know what it reminds me of is that scene or the whole bit in A Christmas Story where he sends off for his little decoder pin, and he runs home every day to check his mailbox to see if it's there.
You know, I never really watched that movie, but that brings up an interesting connection. It must have been what it was like for kids
in
the 50s, waiting for things to come in the mail whenever it came in the mail.
Just all these little Star Wars fiends back in 78 running to their mailbox to see if it showed up yet.
And then that glorious day where
this
nondescript white box with your name on it, mind you, arrived. And you opened it up, and there was a little plastic tray inside. There was R2-D2, Princess Leia, C-3PO, and Chewbacca, and a little plastic envelope, a dozen little pegs that would fit into that cardboard display you had sitting on your shelf all this time.
Oh, Cole, you're not gonna cry, are you?
I cry every day about this.
Did Chewbacca have a green gun?
The gun was a little greenish. Yeah, if you held it in the light, it was almost translucent.
Because
of the plastic they were using. If you watch
that's how you know you have an early bird Chewie or Chewie gun.
Yeah, I think it was a little greener than, and then Luke had the telescoping lightsaber.
Right.
Which is what we were promised, and then when Ben and Vader came out, like, hey, whoa, what gives here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's holding a candle, not a telescoping lightsaber.
Oh, goodness.
And then what would follow, of course, was the months and grueling months of waiting to find something, you know, early on. And also saving your money for the just ponderous $1.99 a piece you were having to fork over for these.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the audacity that they would charge $1.99 for an action figure.
Oh, no, I can top that. I remember when, of course, you could get them for $1.99 at Toys R Us and Best Products. Actually, I remember Best was $1.97.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
Cents, you actually saved 2 cents if you went to
but
Best.
If you went to Montgomery Ward's or Sears, they were $2.99, and that was like, it was like, you know, trying to find Wonka's golden ticket. It's like, you're not going to get it. You're not going to get a figure at Sears because they're $2.99.
So, yeah,
and you know,
yeah.
You go by there.
And the worst were the mall stores like Toys by Roy
exactly.
or Circus World, because
exactly.
they would just, you know, they're going to rip you up nine ways to Sunday because it was just, you know, I'm not going to pay $3.19 for this thing.
They were almost as bad as the 5 and 10s because the 5 and 10s would price $3.49 or something.
They were always, it was sort of the convenience store of toys, because there would come a point, if you were me, where desperation would set in.
Yes.
And you were willing to pay that extra money because you couldn't find FX7 anywhere except Mott's. Or Emmy Moses, I forget which one it was. It was over on Illinois Avenue in Dallas.
By the library.
Yes. That was the only place I could find FX7, and I finally
got it. Oh, my gosh, I remember going into that same one, and I remember at one point, later on, after the movie had been out for a while, I had gone in there a couple of times, and they must have had 50
yes.
Han Solos
yes.
on their display that would run all the... It was like almost to the ceiling, because they were
yes.
so many of them. You remember this, Eddie?
So that wasn't a dream. That was real.
It was real. They were all Han Solos.
And they were the big-headed Han Solos.
And yes, and they were the big-headed ones. And I've never even told you this, Eddie. Years
uh-oh.
Later, it was 1990. I was a senior in high school, and we were going out having to sell ads for our yearbook. We were going around Oak Cliff looking for places to sell it to, and someone mentioned go to Emmy Moses' warehouse, which was off of Westmoreland Road and... near Westmoreland in Illinois. There were some warehouses and factories back there. And I remember going into the Emmy Moses thing and giving them the information. And I remembered, because I was still a Star Wars fan in 1990, I wanted to lean over the counter and say, I know you've got to have some boxes of about 500 Han Solos, because they're not at that Emmy Moses anymore. They're sitting in that warehouse back there somewhere. There's like 500 Han Solos sitting in there. And I was so, but there was like other people there, and I was afraid because
they're like nerds.
But yeah, somewhere in that warehouse, there's got to be tons of big-headed Han Solo. Yeah, sitting
you
in
know,
boxes because nobody bought them at $3 a piece.
Okay, you know, it's funny. I think I told the story about going to Emmy Moses and seeing the wall of Star Wars figures. I think we talked about this on the second episode of Rancor Pit. But what I didn't say was it was all Han Solos, because seriously, in my mind, I thought I had imagined all the figures being Han Solo, and I thought, there's no way it could have all been Han Solo. I must have remembered it wrong.
They were, and because I'll tell you what, yeah, I remember what we ended up getting instead, because we already had Han Solo.
Yeah.
You remember what we did get?
No.
We got those cheesy metal R2-D2 and 3PO necklaces.
Oh,
remember
yeah!
Those?
Oh,
with the little,
those
that they
things.
Had little arms
yes.
that moved. We picked,
uh-huh.
Our parents bought those instead, because we didn't need another Han Solo. But the necklaces were actually just as cheap, and they were kind of cooler because they were necklaces. So we got R2 and a 3PO, and that's what we wore those things like Mac Daddies. We wore them around the neighborhood.
Yeah, that was our bling back in 1978. Hey, Cole, just real quick, you mentioned FX7. Did y'all hear the story about FX7 this past week?
No.
And if you Okay, so this is a story just literally like a couple of days ago. Apparently somebody put, and it wasn't an eBay auction, it was on some site called Vectis Auctions. I've never heard of Vectis. But they had a FX7 medical droid. The opening bid on it that they were asking for was $97 because it was a Palutoid.
Oh, Palutoid, yes, I did see something about that.
Yeah, it was unpunched, it was a Palutoid card, and, you know, apparently in mint condition, bubble was pristine. Opening bid was something like $97. The sucker ended up going for $12,900.
Good lord.
$12,900. That is insane.
So I guess those British kids, they didn't save their stuff. They
could build your own FX7 for that. For
that's amazing to me. But I'll tell you, the one thing about Palutoid has got to be their original Death Star playset.
Yes, thank
made
you
out of cardboard.
That up. Yeah,
it's like a half dome playset. I wish they would reissue that, or at least make it in some sort of whatever. Because that's a really neat looking toy, and I've
that was a neat little thing. And if you're not familiar, Palutoid was Britain's answer. They were the licensee to Kenner's Star Wars line.
Yeah.
And so Kenner would produce the stuff. Well, it would be released in the UK under the Palutoid label. But Palutoid did that Death Star, which was their own thing.
Yeah.
Which is kind of unique, and like they may or may not have brought Kenner's Death Star over at the time, you know, or at a later time, but they produced a little cardboard Death Star playset that Kenner never opted to bring over here.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, as I say, after that, you had your initial 12-figure line, and you had the display there to inspire you to get the other eight figures, because, you know, here you had those nice little watercolor images behind each one that, in many ways, looked better than the actual figure. And I remember the hardest one to find, oddly enough, turned out to be the Death Squad Commander. That was tremendously elusive, and I think my poor dad had to go to Redbird Mall and get one, because I finally tracked one down, and I would just beg them to hold on to it just for the day.
So he had to give in to the tyranny of Circus World and pay that extra money.
Yeah, I had to pay an extra buck or something for that.
Yeah. Oh,
you know why you had to do that? And I can tell you, this is another story that Eddie may remember, that when we were growing up, and it sounds like, Cole, you were kind of in the same boat, we were not, you know, our family didn't have a whole lot of money. So it was like, when we went, you would get one figure that we split between the two of us.
Yeah.
So you would just pick up one extra figure for $1.99. And, you know, I guess they could have gotten this too, but it was like mom and dad were the same. We're like, you know, you only need one. You don't need two. Don't get crazy. So it was like,
they were saying, we already let you go see Star Wars in the theater three times. That's unprecedented.
But for some reason, we were bugging them, and I remember we needed a Death Squad Commander as well, and we had a few others that we hadn't picked up. And we ended up going one day, and it was like an early Saturday morning. And they took us to the best product at Redbird Mall, and we went in, and they said, you can go in, and you can pick up all the ones you need. And that blew my mind. We were like, what? We can get more than one?
I remember this story, and this is the point where I'm going to start crying.
But you actually go in, and I can tell you, it's weird how, I can't remember what I did yesterday, but I remember going in there. When you would go into Best Product, you'd go into the big showroom, which, for folks that don't remember, Best Products was what they call a catalog store. And so they're not necessarily department stores, but they were like showroom department stores. But you would go into the main showroom.
There would be like one thing, one of each thing, and you.
Yeah, but they had more inventory upstairs, so they could order it, and it would come down like a conveyor belt.
The conveyor belt, that's right.
And so,
well, I bought my first VCR there, as a matter of fact.
Really?
Oh, nice.
But when you would go into the Best Products at Redbird, you would hang a right, go through a couple of doors into toy section.
It was like, wasn't it like a turnstile or something?
Yes, they even had.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, they had.
Yeah,
they had
the sports outfit and outdoor stuff. And I remember, because nobody would go in there, I remember that day going through the turnstile. The lights were still off in that section because nobody went in there.
Into the toy section. That's
into the
right.
Toy section. I remember going in there, and you got hit by like a wall of cold. Because nobody would go in there in the air conditioning. But it was always like that. It was always freezing in that room. And I remember we went in there, and a worker went in, and we told him what we were looking for. And the guy was like, okay, they're not here. He went to the back and brought out a case, cracked open the case, and there was a display inside. And I think the guy even said, do y'all want the display thing?
Oh, it was like, crap, I forgot about that.
And we were like, what are we going to do with that?
Oh, my gosh.
And so we picked
up. I hadn't thought about that in how long. Oh, my gosh.
Because we picked up the Death Squad Commander, the Sand People, and I think we even got another Jawa, or we picked up a few.
Yeah.
And I remember going back, and we were like, our minds were blown, because we were like getting like four or five figures at one time.
Yeah.
And so we went and got our Death Squad Commander.
Uh-huh.
And we may have even had to get another Darth Vader because the head had broken off of ours.
That's right. That's
and I tried to glue it back on, and it was
yeah, it was like a bobblehead. It would never stay on.
And I still remember to this day, we were going home in our Chevrolet Cordoba with Corinthian leather, as Khan would say in the commercial. Which, do you remember this, Ricardo Montalban?
Oh, with, yes. It's,
with fine Corinthian leather.
And now that it's Corinthian leather, it's a smooth ride.
And we were in the back seat, and we had all the figures on the back dash while we were playing. It was like the greatest day ever.
Yeah, we had all the figures. First, we had them all lined up on the back window dash. You know, we were just like studying the packaging. And then, like, did we bother breaking them open there, or did we wait till we got home?
No, we broke them open in the car.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Wait.
Yeah, and they were
But I do remember we had them all lined up in a row. And we were just like staring at them because we couldn't believe we had gotten so many figures at one time.
And yeah. I remember, I think it was either my mom or dad said, "Don't lose the guns," because whenever we would lose a gun, we would turn the house upside down looking for them.
That's right.
Because they was like, you know, "You're not going to get another one. You're going to go buy another one to get the gun or the lightsaber." And so,
well,
yeah.
A little known fact that it was not very well publicized.
Oh, here we go. I know what's coming.
You could actually, if you lost stuff, you could write to Kenner and they would, like a friend of mine, I think he lost a Jawa gun. I think Steve had lost a Jawa gun or something like that. And he just wrote to Kenner on the off chance and they sent him just a bag full of all kinds of weapons.
That's
and crazy. Then he was thinking, like, what am I going to do with the rest of this stuff? All I needed was the one. And then, of course, yes, there is the story of my, I don't know if I've told it on this show or not, but having broken the thumb off my 12-inch scale Jawa when I was trying to put the gun in his hand. And I figured out, because it was made of plastic, you took the cloth off, you took the bandoliers off and everything. It was just basically a plastic that was held together. It was one of the few things that wasn't ultrasonically welded together. It was actually bolted together. And I went there and unscrewed the thing. Took the body apart, pulled the broken arm out, screwed it back together, sent the arm into Kenner. They sent me back a Jawa, the whole thing, in the package.
Well,
they folded that awkward flap around to get it to fit in the box. But you know, so now I had the one-armed Jawa. And again, it was sort of like, what am I going to do with a one-armed Jawa? So I just kept all of the accessory pieces. I kept the gun, the bandolier, and the cloak, and just tossed the one-armed Jawa.
Uh-huh.
And many, many years later, sold the component parts off. But, you know, you could pretty much, if you were missing something or just wanted an extra. And, you know, I had hatched this scheme to get a bunch of friends to try to build ourselves a Death Star piecemeal.
You were doing Build-A-Figure before there was a Build-A-Figure.
Exactly. I think it's a good thing we didn't pursue that, because to have that many addresses you know, that were all in relatively the same part of Texas.
I could just see them firing their Kenner rep that was in that area for doing a shoddy job of.
But you know,
funny. I didn't realize you would go to Redbird Mall, that you were, you know, that close. That was like your mall. And it's
obviously you don't listen to this show either, Vic.
No, I listened a couple times, but I never caught on that you were talking about Redbird. I know you would talk about this area, but I didn't realize that we were going to the same stores.
For Vic and anybody else who hasn't listened to episode 3, That is the true origin of the Rancor pick, because that's where we found out that years back when Return of the Jedi was about to come out, that's where Cole and I first met, was in that little center area where they were doing the big Return of the Jedi promotional
thing. I'll admit, I did not listen to number three. I heard the first two episodes, and I listened to the last three episodes. And I didn't listen
to... Funny thing is, we never knew this, but we were at the same place at the same time all those years ago.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Hey, Vic, obviously your memory is way better than mine. What was the first Star Wars figure we actually bought? I always racked my brain trying to remember what it was, and I could never remember.
I'm pretty sure it was Chewbacca.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it was Chewbacca, and I think it's the one we still have, because Chewbacca was pretty indestructible. I mean,
yeah, that's for sure.
Is so true.
I mean, you can only wear out the bandolier, and that was about it. Everything else is broken. And see, it's funny. That's really, I think, why Star Wars has become such a cultural touchstone for so many people, because everybody collected the toys. On our block, we had ourselves. There was the kid next door, also got Star Wars. The other kid on the block down the end, they collected Star Wars. I had a friend across the street. All the kids that were our age, all of us collected Star Wars, because that's what there was. It's not there is a day where you've got these little... Everyone has their own little niche, little fandom thing that they're all into, and everyone has different little things.
Yeah.
Everyone collected it. And it's like, you know, we all had the same sort of experiences. We all remember, you know, different little things, and it's because it was such a big deal. It's like that's... You know, your childhood, that whole period was kind of revolved around that, which is why, you know, the new movies, even if they're going to be great, they're never going to be like the old ones, because it's not going to be the same cultural phenomenon where it just kind of defined a whole generation.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, like the whole mail-aways and all that, it's never really the same. You know, it was funny when Kenner came, well, they were still Kenner in 95, when they started doing the new figures, and they did the Han Solo Trooper mail-away corn pops.
Yeah, Applejack. It was Applejack's, wasn't it? No, Applejack's did the comic book.
No, I thought, no, Applejack's did the Ghost of Obi-Wan, didn't they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Frito-Lay did one as well, because I remember having to mail in some really greasy proof of purchase seals.
Yeah, I can't remember who did the Spider Droid. It was one of those a little later, but yeah, and it was almost kind of the same, but it was a little nostalgic, but it was like, man, we ate a lot of corn pops to get, because we all wanted extras of the Hand Trooper, because like we all wanted to relive that whatever. But you know,
the annoying thing about that Han Solo Trooper was it did not have a gun.
Yeah.
Because the cereal company did not want to, I guess, be associated with...
Yeah, they didn't want to promote guns, but it was okay to promote wars by saying Star Wars.
And let's put some MSG and different chemicals in the cereal that you're having to eat five boxes of to get your freebie.
So then they later came out with the Indiana Jones and the Nazi uniform mail-away with no bazooka, or no rocket launcher, rather, because... They didn't want to be associated with any kind of weaponry, but they didn't want to associate with people dressing up as bad guys.
Yeah.
And even today, when they did the new Indy line, they were all German soldiers with no insignia, which I can kind of understand.
Kind of hard to market authentic Nazis in pretty much any country these days.
But it ruined dioramas, because you couldn't have done the final scene from Raiders without the swastika banners that the ghost would fly through. It's like, you can't do that now.
I just can imagine there being like a pitch meeting for the Indiana Jones figures. Can I have like the opening the Ark playset? No, we can't. You know, no, this is not going to happen.
Oh, God.
Going back to the vintage line, there is, I think, a sense of nostalgia that even the excitement of finding the new figures when you can. Like the other day, I was at a Target, and wow, look, it's Black Series 6-inch Greedo on open shelves.
Uh-huh.
And that was the first time I'd seen any of the Black Series 6-inch figures anywhere on open shelves.
Uh-huh.
But it will never quite capture the feel of that hunt back then. And what's amazing is there were more places to look back then and less likelihood to find what you wanted.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. That's a very good point.
How is this a thing? And I think part of it is that there are pretty much anything you want you can find at a price, usually too high online. And back then, you just pretty much had to hoof it. And that's literally, I had a little book that I had all the phone numbers in, and it got to the point where I could just sort of, it was muscle memory to dial best products or...
Oh, gosh. You know, as kids, parents always made us memorize our phone number, so if we ever got lost, we could tell the police officer what our number was. Cole gets lost as a kid, and the police officer's like, hey, what's your phone number, kid? I don't know, but I can tell you the number to Kmart.
That's right. Maybe they know. They see me enough. But I remember calling, one of my favorite stories was calling to... You know, you'd call some places, and sometimes they'd be very accommodating. Sometimes they'd kind of blow you off. And I remember this sweet little old lady, I think it was at Best, who was trying to read off all of what they had. Well, they've got Han Solo and Gringo.
Gringo.
Gringo. I just remember that one just stuck. And then trying to confirm... In the 80s, early 80s, that this woman was actually had a 2-1-B figure.
Yeah.
And I was trying to explain, is it clear in the middle? And that concept was obviously not familiar enough with the character to realize that I was just trying, you know, aim for the midriff. If you can see, if it's see-through, that's what I'm looking for.
Do you realize, Cole, that some poor old woman back then went home and was like, how did you do today at work, dear? Like, some kid was bugging me about this thing. I don't know what it was.
You got a robot.
All kinds of grief. It was like, well, I was having a good day until this kid made me walk through the toy aisle and name all these things. I had no idea what I was talking about.
I tell you, I was a discriminating collector. I returned my 12-inch Boba Fett to Bast, because the little eye hole was faulty. It had that $6 million man eye pipe.
Did it really?
Yeah,
you could,
right.
Yeah, you can look through the back of Boba Fett's head.
Oh, wow.
Or
yeah,
because
the little viewfinder would go down, too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the little camel view and finder was articulated, or you could move it down. And if you're really particularly industrious and imaginative, you could actually make it have a working flamethrower.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I don't endorse utilizing length of aquarium hose and mom's aerosol hairspray.
At night. They thought the rocket fire in Boba Fett was bad.
Exactly. Yeah, strangely, the actual working flamethrower Boba Fett was far more dangerous.
Well, now, tell us about your collection of melted action figures.
That's right. Yeah, ironically, I'm one of the few people that really never... I hear so many vintage collectors, you know, people who were vintage collectors as kids lamenting the M80 attacks or the giant lawnmower of Tatooine...
Yeah,
the other sort of, you know, the giant lawnmower of Tatooine was my favorite because all I could envision was the scene from Caligula. But I'm probably the only person who ever saw the Caligula.
I usually catch your references. I miss that one completely.
You're probably best. The people who don't know what I'm talking about are the people who can sleep at night.
Oh, gosh. It's funny because we had friends who did the same thing. They would always blow up their G.I. Joes and melt, you know, their figures, but I never understood that as a kid. And I guess, Vic, it goes back to what you were saying, you know, the trips to the toy stores were so special because, you know, you got to pick just the one figure. Or it was the same as going to 7-Eleven and each of us getting to pick out one comic book for that week, you know. You kind of really...
Back when 7-Eleven was your comic store.
Yeah, exactly. So it really gave you an appreciation for what you had.
That's another good point, is I think it really depended on the level to which. And, of course, to me, it was just that began a period, because I was going on 12 in 77, in summer 77. So by the time I had figures in my hands, I was well past 12 years old. And
you were more responsible at that point.
Yeah, but that didn't stop us. You know, most of the vintage figures I can look at right now, a lot of the earlier ones, because most of the early ones were the very ones I bought as they came out, with the exception of, like, 3PO, or R2-D2 and R5-D4, a great many of them had a penchant for swimming early in their careers. They would often accompany us to the pool, and were often known to jump in the deep end and have to subsequently be rapidly recovered.
Well, we were kind of the same. Well, I mean, we were careful with our action figures, but I do remember the house that we grew up in. There was one time, and I went out and had to go turn on our water hose, and we had a thing where it was an older home, and so the little water spigot was down. It was down in the ground, so you would have to. There was a little concrete cover that you would open up a little lid, reach down, and turn on the hose. And I remember reaching down and looking down where, you know, it had been dripping, so that it was kind of muddy around it. And I see something down in the mud, and I reached down, and I pulled out, and I looked, and there's an X-Wing, Luke Skywalker X-Wing pilot in the mud, which we must have dropped, and it was like, oh, my gosh. It was like,
where
did
he go?
That's where he went.
Yeah, he was missing for years, and so,
and I'm throttling the kid next door because I'm accusing him of stealing it, and I'm giving him a black eye, and it's like, and the whole time it's in the mud in our own yard.
But I do remember, and I'm sure a lot of us were the same way. We would, you know, you would bundle up your collections and go to each kid's house. But
exactly.
You had to be careful. You didn't want to mix your collections because then you got something left behind, or I don't know, that's my Stormtrooper, the really nice one. You had to be careful with that. But we would always go, and, you know, of course, they did the really cool play sets, but we were always kind of the same way, and I know Eddie remembers this. We had a really big backyard, and we had a really nice patio, and we had a picnic table and everything. We would take a whole bunch of old bricks, and we would build fortresses.
Yeah.
And I was always obsessed with the Alamo at that age. Being from Texas, every kid was obsessed with the Alamo, but... Yeah, and so we would build little Alamos and stick paper between the rocks. We would light those on fire, but you couldn't put the figures too close to them. And we would do that with our Star Wars guys and our guys.
Were you fighting for Texas's independence with Luke Skywalker and Han Solo? Is that?
No, it was
Vader like symbolic. Santa Ana?
Yeah, our Yoda had a little raccoon hat on and a Bowie knife.
Nice, yeah.
He would use his little cane to draw a line in the sand.
But what's funny, because it does bring up something I wanted to touch on in this, is as people who grew up not only collecting but playing with these figures, and that's something that a lot of times you don't hear much about is... You know, I still play around with my figures and goof off to this day.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember as a kid, my older brother's 2 years older than I am, my younger brother 4 years younger. And so my younger brother and I would still, you know, it was nice to have someone of an age who was still actively engaging in play. And I really credit a lot of my creativity as a writer, as an adult, and... you know, when I first discovered a penchant for writing, to that play, that because we were literally writing without words. We were sort of just ad-libbing adventures and stuff. As I got older, the more sophisticated these things became, to the point of just ridiculous. But more often than not, and it may be because I was older at the time, we weren't playing Star Wars. But the figures were the perfect stand-ins for our own original characters. I was just curious if that was... Did you?
Oh, yeah, I definitely did that with my G.I. Joes. Like, I would create adventures using the kids of my class, like my friends, and I would assign a different G.I. Joe to different kids in the class.
I guess that means you would always make Scarlet, like the hot girl that you always liked, and that was always Scarlet.
Yeah, pretty much. I remember I was airborne. I assigned airborne to be myself. So I do remember that. I can't remember who everybody else was, though.
So you were not of Native American descent.
Yeah, but he was cool. He had all the cool gear. And he was a paratrooper, and Dad was a paratrooper. So, I, you know, made that connection there.
Oh, there you go.
See? Yeah. Well, yeah, so suck it, Vic.
Okay. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, you know, when you were talking about, you know, the actually playing with your toys and how that's kind of a lost art in that whole imagination thing. Mm-hmm. You know, of all the Star Wars stuff that I have, the collectible stuff, the stuff that I really cherish are the original old broken toys. You know, I have the original land speeder, the top nacelle engine broke off way back in the 80s. There's no seats in it. You know, there's the windshield's gone, so it's
the hood's off of it too, isn't it?
Yeah,
you need to get Vic a new vintage.
You know, I've been meaning to pick up the new one.
Right here on the show, we are going to get Victor Medina a brand new replacement.
I don't want it. I love my original that has, because that was the one I had back in
the
day.
That's true. Yeah.
And that was the whole point, is that you know that those things are still. It's not so. And I hate to say it's not so much about Star Wars, which it is, because it was something we all loved and kind of shared in, but it's just a symptom of, you know, it's good old days syndrome. It's you're able to apply good old days syndrome to your Star Wars toys and to the movies and stuff. You know, right here, I'm sitting here in my home office right here, and I've got my TV set up. I've got a Blu-ray player and all that, but I also have a VCR. And the original trilogy, the unaltered original trilogy, non-special editions in here. And there'll be times I'll pop that in, you know, even though I've got it on Blu-ray in perfect quality, I'll stick in the VHS because it's the original one. It's the ones I used to watch as a kid.
Oh, absolutely. I've had
and that's what it all boils down to. It takes you back to when we were growing up in the old house in the old neighborhood, and you actually knew the kids on your block, and, you know, you'd get together when... You know, there was that one kid that lived the next block over that had all the money. Do you remember him, Eddie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He had the AT-AT. He had
all the big vehicles. And what was cool is he also had, like, a stuffed mongoose and rattlesnake little, you know, thing in his room.
Oh, I remember when that... You would go to, like, the weird little import store in the mall.
Yeah.
And that was a thing back then. I don't know how many mongoose and... Cobras had to die in India to satisfy that market.
But I mean, and it's weird because, you know, you don't see that anymore. And I guess, I don't know, maybe in 10 or 20 years, you know, the kids growing up today are going to find something that's
Are you talking about the mongooses and rattlesnakes?
No, I was talking about Vic's trying to get that one back. Maybe in 10 or 20 years, they'll start killing these damn things again.
That reminds me, I've got to say this.
Continent's crawling with them.
I'm telling you, and I'll post this at Revenge of the Fifth because it's awesome, but I'm sure the collectors and fans will enjoy this. There's a guy with Action Figure Insider... about a year or two ago, posted artwork for rejected items that they were going to do for Episode 1 as a tie-in with Pepsi. They were going to do all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, because the merchandising for that was already nuts as it was.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the stuff that they did, and I kid you not, when you were talking about stuffed mongooses, one of the things they were going to make that Lucasfilm rejected was stuffed heads of creatures from the original trilogy. They were, you would have actually been able to buy a plaque with a Wampa head, a Bantha head, a Tauntaun head, and a Rancor head. They were going to have them on plaques that you could buy and hang on your wall, and Lucasfilm rejected it as they didn't want them to make
that's
it.
That's a shame.
They also were going to, some of the other ideas that they rejected were an inflatable Emperor's chair. And apparently what looks like a Jabba beanbag, a Death Star basketball, a popsicle maker that made head and carbonite popsicles, which they've done now with the ice cube trays.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the stuff that they had there was awesome. I mean, the ideas they came up with, and because it was Frito-Lay, they were going to make a little chip holder, little chip clips, with Darth Vader's head on it, that every time you would open the chips, it would make his breathing sound.
Oh, gosh!
They were going to make...
They were going to get tiresome.
They were going to get... Yeah. They were going to make Yoda's hut that was a pencil holder. You would put the pencils in Yoda's chimney, and then you would take out the pencils and you'd stick it in his window and it would sharpen your pencils for you.
Nice. It's
crazy.
Okay, we didn't get all that cool
I
stuff.
I think it should have also said, sharp, your pencil is.
How is it that we didn't get all that cool stuff, but they gave us the Jar Jar sucker where you had to suck his tongue?
You had to soul kiss Jar Jar. Yeah. Why is that something that's approved?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know who got all the cool stuff was Japan.
Yes.
Japan
no, you're
got
right.
All the cool stuff. They had all the really weird items, like the really cool Pepsi, the R2-D2 Pepsi holder, you know,
yeah.
And all that kind of stuff, because the Japanese will buy anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you didn't get crazy stuff like that with the vintage stuff. I mean, you know, and that's funny, you know, trying to bring it back to the original Kenner toys. You know, as, you know, now going back, and I don't buy a whole lot of the vintage stuff anymore. I do buy some of it, but the stuff that I like buying is the stuff that was rare back then. Like, one of the things I really like buying now, I picked up the old Sears Hoth playset. That you could only get at Sears.
I was going to bring that up. I'm glad you brought that up.
Because we, I know, Eddie and I remember this, and I'm sure most kids picked up, they did the old playsets with the cardboard AT-AT.
Oh, yeah.
And then they did the cardboard Sandcrawler.
Yeah.
And, you know,
Jawas it was the first one with the cardboard
Sandcrawler. Right, and then they just recolored the base and made it Hoth and added a cardboard AT-AT before they actually did
That's
the
right,
AT-AT.
Children
and,
everywhere could wonder, why is there a big tank tread across the
snow? In the snow. But, and it's funny, but then what they ended up doing was Sears had a version where they used the same white base, but instead of the AT-AT background, it was new artwork of the hangar from the Hoth hangar.
Oh, that's right. That was for one of their releases.
And it was only
a Sears. Yeah, the Cantina figures, the first release, and this is the genesis of the blue Snaggletooth versus the red Snaggletooth.
Uh-huh.
The blue Snaggletooth was the first Sears exclusive, which was Christmas of 1978. Mm-hmm. And oh, how I begged for that one when I saw that in the video. And it was because you got a cardboard backdrop that was supposed to be the outside of Mos Eisley Cantina. Where they got the design elements, I don't know. And they were pretty big on tank treads back then, because part of the artwork was like kind of a tank tread motif going across the sand there. But inside you had the four and subsequently only Cantina creatures they ever made in the vintage line, which were Hammerhead, Walrusman, Snaggletooth, and Greedo.
Yeah.
And Snaggletooth was in blue, with silver boots, and mm-hmm. with a little split in them, like a hoof. And the Walrus Man was just, I hated that figure. It was just awful looking. Looked nothing like the character. I found out many years later they didn't have a lot to go on.
Yeah, they only had a headshot, which is why the Snaggletooth was done in the wrong size.
Exactly,
because they didn't know.
Out, by the way, he was wearing red, and he was played by a little person.
Yeah, wasn't Walrus Man wearing like a little jazzercise outfit or something?
Yeah, and in fact...
And had webbed feet.
If you look at the Nebron Leeds figure in the modern line, who is the four-armed guy with the big head and the gas mask from the Cantina,
uh-huh.
Greedo is wearing his outfit in the vintage line.
Oh, okay.
If you have that figure, go and look, and you will see that Nebron Leeds is the one who is wearing Greedo's jumpsuit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right. That's exactly right, because I do have that. I have that one. But
when the Snaggletooth finally came out on the card, I had to buy him a second. He was the only exclusive I had to buy a second time because, you know, hey, he's red, and he's been lopped off at the shins and now has furry feet.
And you know what's kind of cool, and I know you've seen this, but for those who haven't, with General Giant doing the new jumbo-size vintage figures, they actually did a set of those four Cantina figures
with a blue
sack Snaggletooth with the cardboard backdrop done in a 12-inch scale. So you can get that Cantina
amazing,
backdrop. Yeah. It's
to
crazy.
To have that in that scale.
Yeah. But,
I think it would be love to do that, just out of nostalgia, but I would not have nowhere to put it because it has a tremendous footprint.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing was when that came in, and it was in the actual, there were graphics on the box. You know, you had to buy it exclusively through Sears catalog. I don't even think they had it in the stores.
Right.
And it would, it came in time for Christmas, and it had, you know, proper kind of flat box, and you'd pull it out, and there would be the backdrop, and here were the four individual figures in their little clear plastic sleeves and with the Kenner logo on them. And then later on the card, the red Snaggletooth came out, which is the only Cantina creature I bought on the card. But I do remember seeing, like, everyone that these came in, I mean, I loved the Hammerhead. I loved the way that character looked. The
yeah.
design was just amazing. And I remember carrying the stupid thing in my pocket to school. Because I just, I didn't want to be, I was, and that was one of those figures where I literally, growing up, there were times, talking about the excitement of getting these things, where I would literally pinch myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because it didn't seem real that, you know, I finally got this one figure.
Yeah.
It but always bugged me with that Hammerhead was always looking to the left. Like, he was like, what's that?
Yes, hear? Exactly. Yeah.
He was always looking to the left. All the
was
figures
so
were painted like. He was like, he had a little shifty eye. You were like, oh.
Well, he did live on Tatooine. You had to watch your back on Tatooine
yeah.
and Mos Eisley.
Yeah, apparently everything was always coming at you from the same side. Forever. But the playset that Vic's talking about, they didn't do an exclusive every year, obviously, but they did keep the exclusivity thing going.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only one, I believe, that they did for... actually, that wasn't the only one they did for the Empire. I think that was the first one they did for Empire, if memory serves.
Yeah.
Because it was by far the most expensive to produce, because you actually had a plastic base and a cardboard, a corrugated cardboard backdrop.
Yeah.
But it was like the... And it came with a rudimentary version of the radar laser cannon.
Yeah.
It was smaller and didn't explode like the big one that they charged real money for.
Yeah.
But it was a representation thereof. And you got I believe that was the first... And the nice thing was you got them before they came out on the card.
Yeah.
And you got the Hoth Rebel Commander.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Leia.
And
possibly
you got the Rebel
Luke.
Soldier, didn't you?
No, the Rebel Soldier had actually come out by itself. But then again, it's hard to say because I can't really recall. I think it may have been the AT-AT driver was with that one. Which would make sense because it had that... No, that wasn't the one that had the god-awful cardboard AT-AT. Now I'm starting to draw a blank because had no figures with it. And I want to say that Hoth one with the AT-AT had no figures with it.
Right, it didn't, because I think that because they were able to sell it cheaper, because I think they get it for like
that one was
bucks.
Not one of the series exclusives. So yes, the that set I believe came with the AT-AT. Would have to actually do some research. But then they didn't do anything. They did one more for Empire, which was a completely cardboard carbonite carbon freeze chamber.
Right.
Playset that came with Lobbit.
Is that how you say
it
his
came
name?
With the Bespin Guard, too.
That's right.
And it may have come with Lando, and I'm not sure if that's right or not. But or maybe he was an Ugnaught.
Yes, I think it was the Ugnaught, the with Lobbit, and the Bespin Guard.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
It's almost impossible to find one of those now, especially the cardboard one. Now, I was able to get the Hoth Sears exclusive, and that's the beauty of eBay. I was actually able to pick it up, you know, with the complete backdrop and the base, no cannon. And I think I got it for $12 because it right at the height of when the new movies had come out and nobody was buying vintage, and you could pick up vintage stuff for like nothing. So yeah, and so I now I have that piece in my collection. But yeah, I still never did pick up the Bespin set. Those cardboard sets are really neat looking. They're ingenious the way they did them. But
and then for Jedi it got interesting, and I remember because I bought every one of these thinking, just in case there's another blue Snaggletooth.
Yeah.
But then for Jedi, they actually did two play sets that were Sears exclusives as well, and they were retooled Droid Factory bases.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
All of the little holes, all the little compartments for all the parts were done over as just weird little tchotchkes.
Mm-hmm.
But it had the same boom. They added the power droid foot-burning iron.
Yeah.
To the end of the boom, but it had the same hook, the same boom, the same base, essentially,
mm-hmm.
as the droid factory. And
yeah,
I can't remember.
Droid Factory. It was called Jabba's Dungeon. That's what it was.
Yeah, they did two Jabba's Dungeon playsets, as a matter of fact. The first, I'm trying to remember who came with it. The second one was the coolest, because that's... And to this day, I'm so glad I went... I was in college when this was offered. And I'm so glad I bought it, because I never saw a Man-O-Man on the card. Ever.
Yeah, that was the only way to get them. I think the first set had... didn't it come with the Klaatu, Barada, and Nikto?
Yeah, I think so.
The first set had 8D8.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I take that back. You're
because
exactly
the second
right.
set had 99.
Yeah.
And the first set had Barada. The second set had 99 Barada and
a Man-O-Man.
Man-O-Man. I think the other one was Klaatu, Nikto, and 8D8.
Yeah, that's right.
And they kind of just colored the bases a little bit differently on each of those.
I was going to say
I did just look up a picture and realize now where this sheet of stickers I have to this day came from. I knew it was a Star Wars sheet, but I couldn't place it with anything. It was some stickers you put in the front of that base.
Mm-hmm.
I guess to make it look like it's got buttons, you have to get down on your hands and knees to work.
That's right. I remember that. We had the original droid set because that was so cool because you could make your own R2 and stick those.
Yes, and it was the only way you could make R2 with three legs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hated the fact that they made the stem of that so long that you couldn't use it with your regular R2 because of the screw up inside the underside of his head.
That's right. That was always my favorite, was that Droid Factory set. It was that was always definitely one of my personal favorites of the old set.
And, of course, I think no discussion of the vintage line is complete without the incredibly awkward Imperial Troop Transport.
Oh, God. The infamous. Or as we like to say,
the shooting gallery on wheels.
Put all the scrubs on the outside of it.
Yeah.
And the high ranking officers go on the inside.
It's safe.
That was a Sears exclusive, too, right?
I don't know. I don't think.
You know what? I think what ended up happening is it was released first at Sears, and then it went.
Maybe that's why I'm thinking.
Yeah, you could get it everywhere else.
Sears did tend to get a lot of stuff before anybody. But, you know, there was a time where you could get almost anything at Sears.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about, like, 1812, you know, when people would write songs about it. But, like, I have my Admiral Akbar Don Post mask I bought at Sears because every Halloween they used to have a Halloween shop.
Yeah, they would set up that Halloween shop. That's right.
And I used to go there and buy Star Wars masks.
We would get ours at Emmy Moses because we have, we've got to find that picture.
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Where, who was, okay.
Oh, definitely, if you find that, we're so posting it here.
Vic was Darth Vader and I was Obi-Wan.
And we didn't get an Obi-Wan outfit, but tell them how you were Obi-Wan, Ed. Do you remember?
I'm sure it's embarrassing though. I'm sure you're gonna.
Oh yeah, it absolutely is. Of course, I had the little Dom Post.
As your brother, he's obliged to tell
exactly.
And the poncho, but no, for you, for Obi-Wan, our mother had a really gaudy '70s brown, not corduroy jacket, but it was a weird kind of really thick felt jacket that it was brown and it had like a little like belt thing that you could kind of tie in the front, and it had a hood.
That's right. I knew it was like women's apparel. That's why I didn't want to bring it up.
But when you put it on a kid, it looked like a Jedi robe.
That's right. It really did.
And we had, and we didn't buy, of course, because we couldn't afford the licensed lightsabers. We bought the off-brand inflatable lightsabers.
But those were better. They worked better.
They actually were. Yeah, because you could bang the heck out of them.
Oh,
and,
I bought laser sword or something like that at Treasury that was far superior to any license.
Oh, my gosh, I remember the Treasury off of I-35.
That's the sole reason I brought that up, is I knew you guys would remember the Treasury. And almost no one remembers the Treasury.
What is the Treasury?
What?
Okay,
the Treasury was JCPenney's attempt to compete with Target.
I don't remember that.
And in Dallas, they built next door to Target.
You're kidding!
Yeah, well, okay, now you remember, if the listeners that are in the Dallas area, in South Dallas, which was pretty much a wasteland of retail stores, you only had a few options, which basically Redbird Mall, And then you had the shopping center on Village Fair Drive, which is on 35 before you got to 20.
Yeah.
And there was a Target back in there. They even had a Red Lobster.
Yeah, I remember
Red Lobster was there. Back
there I remember that Target.
Dan, there was a Handy Dan hardware store because our dad.
Dan, wow.
Yeah.
Because our dad was such a. He would go to Handy Dan all the time to buy stuff, and we would have to follow him in.
Uh-huh.
We would only go knowing that at some point we were going to Target afterwards, and we were going to go to town. But, yeah, the Treasury was like, and that Treasury eventually became a Sam's Club for a while before they, I don't know what it is now. I don't even go into that part of town much anymore.
Yeah.
You know, they also had the Burger King there, and that's the Burger King where we got our Star Wars glasses at.
That's right.
That's right. There was a Burger King there. I used to go and get the Yumbo at that particular Burger King.
The Yumbo? Oh, my gosh.
Get the what?
The Yumbo. It was a ham and cheese sandwich.
I do not even remember that. And we have a Burger King right here that was right by our house we'd go to all the time.
Yeah, and there's like probably one person in the audience like, I used to get the Yumbo.
But you know, when you talk about when you talk about the good old days syndrome, trying to tie it back and use Star Wars to remember the good old days of the 70s and 80s, I had totally forgotten, and I was telling Eddie about this the other day. You know, when going in and getting in vintage stuff as a collector now, instead of going in and buying the old toys that you can get from pretty much anyone, I like to get the odd stuff. So I've gone in and gotten some of the old lobby cards, and something I picked up recently in the past year were the old Burger King Star Wars posters, which if you've not seen, I have them posted on Revenge of the Fifth because the artwork on these things are incredible. They are so well done. I don't know who painted them. Yeah, they were the painter, whoever got it, did such a great job on it. And when I saw that, I was able to pick them up, and I got them for like nothing off of one of these websites. It wasn't even eBay, and I got it for basically nothing. And I was able to pick up the old Star Wars posters, I got a whole stack of lobby cards, about 10 or 12 of them, even some of the rare jumbos that were like 11 by, or 12 by, or 14 by 20, just huge ones. The old soundtrack poster that came in the original LP, that was just the X-Wing and the TIE Fighter flying over the Death Star Trench, which I hardly even remembered.
I've
never seen that artwork ever put out anywhere else, and
also
I got all of it.
In this period, you may remember you used to see this at the grocery store all the time, there was a poster magazine. Essentially was like if you took a gigantic poster and folded it over into force.
Yeah.
And then part of it was like an exploded magazine on one side and a poster on the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you actually have like three panels of article or whatever, and then the cover on one side of the paper and on the other side would be whatever that month's poster was.
Yes. Yeah. Well, basically, what you know, when you have that those kinds of things, what it reminded me of those types of magazines or promotional items, a lot of people don't remember, and I didn't remember until I picked up the posters and went looking online that back then Burger King wasn't the only one doing a Star Wars promotion. There was a chain called Burger Chef that did the exact same thing.
Oh my gosh! Yeah,
and in fact, I think the Star Wars posters I picked up don't have the Burger King logo. They have Burger Chef on them. And in fact, from what I remember reading, because I kind of remember Burger Chef, but I don't think they had many in Dallas. The one by our house was a Burger King, where I'm familiar with that, but it turned out it was like sort of a sister chain in other areas, and they kind of picked it up because they were essentially the Burger King of that area. Mm-hmm. And so they did the whole same promotions of the glasses, the posters, the trading cards that were perforated on a, you get three cards to a set.
Oh, gosh, I remember that.
Oh, yes. You would sometimes get, like, trading cards and bread things.
Yeah, and they even had a game. I even posted on Revenge of the Fifth the original Burger Chef commercial, and they even, a picture of the, it was on YouTube, and a picture of the, they did Star Wars meals back in 78. Through Burger Chef.
No idea.
And you could actually go in, and I remember seeing these for Star Trek, and I wasn't even a Star Trek fan, but they actually did these cardboard ships that you would, you could make the ships out of cardboard. They would come in, like, their Happy Meals. You could create either C-3PO, a land speeder, I think a TIE Fighter, and maybe a Star Destroyer or something. And like I said, I remember seeing when the Star Trek movie came out, they did that for that as well. But they also did them for Star Wars. And I guess it must have been a Burger Chef thing and not a Burger King, because I don't remember seeing them.
No, but I definitely didn't see this.
Yeah, if you do do a search on eBay for Burger Chef Star Wars, and you'll find all the premium, some unpunched, you know, you just, you know, punch out the thing and make your own little C-3PO out of cardboard.
That's bizarre.
Yeah,
also, if you're looking for really old nostalgic things, I've probably talked about it on other shows in the past, is the Star Wars Spectacular, which was published by Forrest J. Ackerman. It was a famous monster special.
Yeah.
But it's called the Star Wars Spectacular. And that was actually on the newsstands right there, summer of 77. It was the very first thing I could get my hands on of the Marvel Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And a few years ago, I finally decided to track one down. I was very happy when the thing came in, and it smelled like rotted old paper, the way old paper, you know, the old newsprint does. But it was just so cool to see that again. Something else, I've got it in a bag hanging on the wall in my studio, and one of these days I want to track down a copy of whatever issue of Dynamite magazine has Sean Cassidy and Chewbacca on the cover.
I've got that one.
Oh, you would.
I do.
You know, we had those back in the day, because I remember getting those in elementary school.
Exactly. I remember Dynamite magazine very well.
Did you get it through the weekly reader program thing or whatever?
Yeah,
order books for them, and you would always get Dynamite.
Dynamite magazine, maybe you could talk mom and dad into letting you buy like a joke book or something.
And it's funny that you mentioned that, and it goes back to, you know, what made Star Wars unique and why it'll never happen today in the internet. You know, part of the whole thing of going to go hunt down the old Kenner figures was sometimes you wouldn't even see the figures. That's why it was so cool to buy a playset or a ship, because you got the booklet inside that had pictures of everything. And that was like the only place you could see like some of the toys if they hadn't come out yet in your area or something. You would see the different items, or like the dolls, because you could never find the dolls.
That's true.
And they had pictures of those in there, and that was always the coolest thing. But it reminded me that, you know, you were talking about the magazines or the comics. I remember, Ed, I don't know if you remember back when the first two movies came out, Marvel did a Treasury Edition comic book of both Star Wars and Empire. I don't know if they did it for Jedi, but they were these gigantic comic books. And, I take that back. I remember getting like a tabloid size Star Wars comic and then a gigantic Empire book, which was like huge.
Yeah.
It was like 2 feet high.
Yeah.
You know, and that was like when the first way, the way you could, you know, see the whole movie. And it's something
I don't think they did for Jedi. They went with more of a magazine size format by Jedi.
Well, I'll tell you exactly what they did for Jedi, because I remember a couple of weeks before the movie opened, it came out in comic book form, and you could get it in a digest. Do you remember getting the digests, Eddie?
Oh, yes, they did the digest as well.
It was in a book, and it was the whole all four issues in a book, and the movie came out. And we had bought it, and we kept telling ourselves we weren't going to look at it until the movie came out.
And funny that.
Yeah, Cole's got a similar story.
And I looked at it anyway, and I saw the panel. Was it Williamson, I think, that did the artwork for it?
Williamson, yes.
Yeah, that did the classic artwork where you see, it says, and Darth Vader, Luke's father, dies. I was like, no! Because the artwork was only, it was Luke Skywalker holding the helmet, and he was looking down like he was crying. I was like, that was so epic. And then to see it, you know, because we went opening day to go see it, you know, it was a whole different thing, but that was like the original internet spoiler, was to get the comics ahead of time.
One of the funny things with the comics is that the Empire comic, depending on which edition you see, I think they corrected it by the time it was published in the monthly.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one edition, like that, either the Treasury or the magazine size, where Yoda looked like he was done in purple, and he looked like the Macquarie Yoda.
Yes, yes.
I've heard this, but I've not.
And then they corrected it to the actual puppet.
Uh-huh.
Needless to say that, you know, when you get a bunch of us who were around back in the day together, and you get talking about Star Wars, you know, we came on here, and there's so many ways you could approach talking about the Kenner stuff. You can get really particular about the history, and you know, we touched a bit on that as well, and, you know, just kind of go through item by item, year by year, what have you. Or you get people like this together, Eddie and Vic, you guys, it's like talking to the people who were there, you know, my contemporaries back in the day, what few of us out in Red Oak, which at the time was the middle of nowhere, were collecting and following Star Wars. And, you know, that's what it really is coming down to. And I'm really happy with the way this panned out. Is it, it's all those little things, like Vic said, it's like that broken land speeder.
Yeah.
That's, you're holding a piece of the past, and that's what's really fascinating about this stuff. It's amazing that to this very day, there are Star Wars toys coming out.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody Kenner took a gamble all those years ago and bought a movie license. And, you know, nowadays you get these movie licensed toys that come out. There's times when I shake my head and say, why did you waste your money on this? Why was that ever a thing?
Yeah.
And to this day, you know, there was a long period where we went without. But, you know, to have something that cumulatively has lasted over 20 years, maybe 20 or 25 years of the 30 or 35 years that it was even a thing, is pretty amazing. So I think that I hope that 20 years from now, we don't have stuffed mongoose and cobra, but that, you know, maybe the three of us will be listening to something like this, that shows like this inspired kids doing their own podcasts, which will of course be televised
in 3D holograms.
and injected right into our brain. But you know, I wanted to be able to hear about somebody who was getting started collecting Star Wars when, you know, I was in my late 30s, early 40s, and they were just discovering Star Wars and collecting and waxing nostalgic like we are. So thank you, Vic, very much for really sharing the insights into the fact that I'm not the only one.
Yes, and thank you for sharing with everybody that I wore my mom's clothing as a child.
And that was, I will find that picture and make it my Facebook profile pic so everyone can see it.
Well, send that along. If we can get it in time, we'll make a show. Because I don't want to run it with any show. I don't.
I also find it hilarious that perhaps at some point in the past, Eddie and I were going through a toy store here in Dallas as little kids, going into the Star Wars aisle, which was gigantic, looking for something in particular and not finding it and cursing the fact that it wasn't there. And somewhere in the next aisle over, a teenage Cole Houston had that same item and was laughing, running to the cash register to go buy the one item that we were looking for.
I probably had it in my hand. And, like that kid, the legendary kid Products, who was carrying around that the Ewok figure.
That was me!
Oh, I knew it! I thought that was you.
No, it wasn't me. I've only heard the story a couple times.
Unless you had some sort of weird fluctuating Benjamin Button disease where you would, like, you know, occasionally be much younger than you should have been, and then go right back, you know, ricochet back to your proper age, because you'd be a lot younger than you are now.
Funny. Oh, good night.
So, Vic, you mentioned a couple of times Revenge of the Fifth. Give us a little plug on where do we find that? Because I think I, for one, am especially interested in going and checking this out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's Revenge of the Fifth with a 5th.net. And it's something where I go in, either Eric or I, you know, once a week, you know, if we come across something nostalgic or just funny that, you know, kind of applies to the original trilogy, we'll go in and post it on there. And, you know, when it comes to more contemporary stuff, I still run a website called CollectoramaShow.com, and I'll just put, you know, whatever new stuff is coming out or just stuff I find that's, you know, modern stuff that I enjoy, I'll stick on there as well. So, and I know I link to y'all on that side, but
excellent.
Yeah,
thank you.
Whenever there's something new, I'll stick that on there. That's just something I do on the side, just for kicks. But
well, you also don't sell yourself short. You also do movie reviews. You know, Bobby Blakey's not the only one that can claim fame to doing that.
Yeah, suck
well,
it,
that's
Blakey.
True. Yeah, I am the my technical title is lead DVD Blu-ray reviewer for Cinelinks.com, and so I review their DVDs and Blu-rays and do that, and do some freelance work for, you know, a couple of some other websites from Yahoo to Examiner and that sort of thing. And so, yeah, that's what keeps me busy during the week.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, but thanks for having me on.
Don't
get to talk Star Wars much, but
we will definitely
get to remind myself
again,
how old I am. So
we will definitely have you on again for that reason, amongst many others, because if you're on here, then I'm not the only one.
Gosh, here we go.
And Eddie will remind me that he's not that much.
Yeah, I'll say.
He's not like that Benjamin Button kid.
Uh-huh, that's right.
So, of course, you could find Eddie and myself here at the Rancor Pit every other week, barring any timing complications like this week's, at the Jedi Cole Universe at jedicole.com.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if you're in Texas like Eddie and Vic and myself and you like to go to conventions, visit Convention Awareness Project Texas at conventionawarenesstx.blogspot.com. And occasionally you can find me and other cast of crazy characters over at the United States of Geekdom at unitedstatesofgeekdom.com. You can follow the Jedi Cole Universe at the Jedi Cole U at Twitter, something I rarely remember to mention.
Yeah.
And you can find Eddie and myself doing Don't Lose Your Geek Cards, the Rancor Pit Star Wars Edition at AltCon.
Can't wait for that.
Very soon, March 13th through the 16th, 2014 in Addison, Texas. Mm-hmm. One of over 250 things going on over the course of 4 days. You've probably read about it on the JCU, and if not, shame on you.
Exactly.
We hope to see absolutely everyone there, and we will have a big announcement we will be making at AllCon.
Yeah, you won't want to miss it. And if you haven't had a chance to check it out yet, my wife Colleen and I just started a new show called Figments. It's also part of the Jedi Cole Podcasting Network. You can find it at JediCole.com. We're releasing the second episode. Probably as you're listening to this, it'll probably already be out.
Should already be out by then.
Yeah, yeah. So definitely, it's a weekly show. We cover everything from cryptozoology to conspiracy theories to just about anything that's unexplained. So I would much appreciate people checking that out and giving us some feedback for that.
So it's kind of like that scene in Kentucky Fried Movie, I live the unknown, I love the unknown, I am the unknown.
And that should be our exit line.
Oh, you should get that Paul Flamont clip and see if you can insert that in there. It's like, and where are you
that.
Living now? Zeph is unknown. I don't know.
I'm going to do that.
Excellent. And with that, we will invite you back here in a couple of weeks. We may actually be running about a week late because of AllCon, but we're going to try our dead level best to go ahead and record in advance. That way, we're not going to have any interruptions. You can listen to us while we're busily toiling away at AllCon for your enjoyment, like the dancing monkey I am. And so we will be back in roughly 2 weeks with more simple tricks and nonsense.